Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. A very warm welcome to you if you just tune in live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up on the program, the China-Africa Summit has begun in Beijing, with China promising to invest $60 billion on the continent. But can Africa win big at the end?
The European countries or USA, they are also not stupid. They were not just looking at China expanding its influence in Africa. I hope African countries can also gain something, to also win something from that competition.
And a high-level conference on the Lake Chad region is taking place in Berlin. But how serious is the situation? We'll hear from the UN chief himself.
If we are not careful and funding does not come through for the next annual cycle, then it means essentially withdrawing our support, leaving people to their own fate in an extremely difficult situation.
These are some of the stories we've lined up for you.
But first, let's listen to World News in brief.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. A German court sentenced asylum seeker Abdul D to 8.5 years in prison on Monday, finding him guilty for murdering his 15-year-old ex-girlfriend in the western German town of Kando last December. The murder has led to xenophobic protests across the country over Chancellor Angela Merkel's liberal refugee policy. In the meantime, several German punk and hip-hop bands are preparing for a concert later tonight against fascism and extremism in the eastern German city of Chemnitz, where violent clashes and neo-Nazi marches have been erupting in recent days after a German man was stabbed to death by two migrants in late August. German government spokesman Stefan Seibert said Berlin condemns the far-right demonstrations.
These marches had an entirely different message, and that is they have a message of hatred against foreigners, against politicians, against the police, against the free press, ultimately against our democracy in Germany, in which we want to live together on a legal basis with all our differences.
Rechtsrespektvoll zusammenleben wollen.
Chinese President Xi Jinping has welcomed several African leaders in Beijing on Monday ahead of a two-day Chinese-African summit that aims to build trade and investments. At the event, Xi pledged around $60 billion for Africa's development over the next 3 years, saying it comes with no political strings attached. Critics argue that Chinese investments have buried some countries under massive debt. A large fire hit Brazil's 200-year-old National Museum in Rio de Janeiro on Sunday, likely engulfing its collection of more than 20 million art items and artifacts. Around 80 firefighters battled the blaze, bringing it later under control. But the extent of the damage and cause of the fire is still not known. Brazilian President Michel Temer said Monday the destruction was a tragedy. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas has pledged 100 million euros in aid for the crisis-hit Lake Chad region, where an estimated 10 million people rely on aid for survival. Speaking at the Lake Chad convention in Berlin, Maas said cooperation between Africa and the EU is essential.
As Europeans, we are convinced that regional cooperation, as it's happening around Lake Chad right now, merits our full support.
In Nigeria, military sources said Monday that 48 soldiers were killed in a Boko Haram attack in the northeast of the country. The Islamic State-affiliated jihadists claimed the Thursday attack and have recently intensified their 9-year insurgency in the Lake Chad region. More than 2 million people have been displaced and over 20,000 killed. And finally, Cristiano Ronaldo, Mohamed Salah and Luka Modric have been nominated for this year's Best FIFA Soccer Player Award. Barcelona star Lionel Messi was omitted from the list after being featured in the top three for 11 straight years. The award ceremony takes place on September 24th. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
This is Africa Link. My name is Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. And of course, you can join us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Drop your comments and We will read them live on air. Now, Chinese President Xi Jinping has told African leaders that China's investments on the continent have no political strings attached. This comes after he pledged $60 billion in a new development financing on the continent in the ongoing two-day China-Africa summit.
But critics warn that countries may come under massive debt if the trend continues. I spoke to Choi Mu, a colleague from the Chinese department here at DW, and first asked him what China was to gain from all these investments in Africa.
It is quite clear that China just wants to expand its influence in Africa. Africa is one of the major markets with maybe the greatest growth potential, so that China doesn't want to miss this chance. I think by investing in infrastructure and improvement of basic economic conditions in African local countries, China may obtain the chance, obtain the opportunity to exploit a new sales market next to EU and USA, which are currently already very important to China.
Let's try to put this into context. How much really does China depend on Africa for its own development and industrial expansion?
A lot of contracts that Chinese corporation that had made with African countries are also has also defined, okay, well, we build an infrastructure project for you, for your African countries and African countries, and just pay it in form not of in USD or in Euro, but in form of natural resources. There are a lot of examples of such contracts.
What really is it about doing business with China that makes it look like a lot of African countries are going in more to do business with China?
China doesn't set political strings on aid in short run, but in long run, the things are totally different.
Considering the rate at which Chinese investment on the African continent is going, what kind of picture do you see in the next 20 years or more?
The European countries or USA, they are also not stupid. They were not just looking at China expanding its influence in Africa. So it may be a big game between all the superpowers, including EU. EU, USA and China, they will play a so-called big game on the African continent. And I hope at the end of the competition, at the end of the big game, that the African countries should not be the loser. I hope African countries can also gain something, could also win something from that competition.
Choi Mu from DW's Chinese department.
And Eddie, of course, you know, China and Africa is always a hot topic with many comments, many opinions, and everyone is opinionated about it anyway, exactly. If I should say. So we asked on our Facebook page, how much does China depend on Africa for its own development and industrial expansion?
Well, starting with Andy Pepe Jr., he says, foreign aid will never solve our problems. Tax cuts will do.
Mede Uoma says China is not giving those loans to help Africa, but exploit their resources like the West. African leaders need to be wise for once and stop creating debt for their countries.
Interesting one. This is a very interesting one also, Isaac. Mm. Coming from your namesake, your host at Godwin says, China is a better partner, even though one cannot be too lenient on their own sanity as to what China aims to gain from all these assistance.
Mm-hmm. And Sadiq Abakar also says, China is more reliable than Western countries and the US. I hope African leaders will correct their first mistakes. Many thanks for those comments.
Now, millions of people in the Lake Chad region have been hit by extreme poverty. A humanitarian crisis due to climate change and violent conflict has led to a massive displacement of 2.4 million people in the countries and across borders. The region is facing human rights abuses, local governance systems, and basic services like healthcare and education have been disrupted.
And it is against that background that a high-level conference on the Lake Chad region is taking place in Berlin, organized by the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP.
Now, DW's Daniel Peltz spoke to Achim Steiner, the UNDP chief, on how his institution will cope without the necessary funding.
A terrible situation, analogous to, you know, a hospital in which you have many victims needing help and you will have to make a triage and decide who are you going to help. In practical terms, it often means cutting food rations, shutting down schools and camps, simply not being able to reach people. So right now, there are still a lot of people who we are not reaching. And yet, if we are not careful and funding does not come through for the next annual cycle, then it means essentially withdrawing our support, leaving people to their own fate in an extremely difficult situation.
We are talking always a lot about donors, but what do the local governments, what are the local communities in the region actually doing to assist the people who have been hit by this crisis?
Well, first of all, we must recognize that a number of the countries themselves have very limited means. They have constraints, and therefore their ability to deal with extreme shocks is obviously severely constrained financially and institutionally. Part of the challenge is also in some of the countries around the Lake Chad region that local government institutions are only supported at a very minimal level, that the resources they have available to even run basic services, be it education, health, infrastructure services, are virtually absent. So their role is also critically important. Here at this high-level conference in Berlin, we have governors present, we have the countries of the Lake Chad Basin region present at national, federal level. And so investments also by federal government budgets in each country are part of the equation. We are in a partnership here.
That was the head of the UNDP, Achim Steiner.
Now, Rwandans have been voting in parliamentary elections, which are expected to cement the ruling Rwanda Patriotic Front's RPF absolute majority. More than 7 million registered voters elected the MPs to 80 seats, 24 of which are reserved for women, 2 for the youth candidates, and 1 for the people living with disabilities.
Now, political analysts expect President Paul Kagame's party to retain its large majority. Shortly before we came on air, I spoke to DW's Etienne Gatanazi in Kigali on what transpired during the day.
Yeah, it was met because most of the of them are youth that had never voted before. There are so much expecting from the MPs to be. Some of them told DW that they have suffered unemployment for so long, and it seems the government has forgotten about its promise of trying and creating some jobs for them. So those are the voters, but there are also the young ones who had come who are trying to stand for a place in the Rwandan parliament. So yes, there are many youth who had come for voting as I went through Kigali in different polling stations.
Interesting. So on the back of this, what was the general mood like then?
The general mood is like in Rwanda, we are used to having that kind of calm situation where there are no reported serious incidents, let it be in the legislative or in the presidential elections. Things almost happen in a calm situation. So since 7 a.m. people are here and voting calmly, that's what I could say.
So talking about expecting results, when exactly are we going to hear the official results?
The official results come around 7 p.m., of course, in the evening, after the counting is done in the whole country. So we are expecting in the evening the provisional results to come out.
Is there anything that stuck out to you that was quite evident in this particular election compared to other parliamentary elections?
Till now, the turnout is the one that has come out to be a bit exceptional, because since 2003 when this started, today we reported more than 7 million voters. So it's just about the number of voters that that was expected, of course, but that had never come before.
I was speaking to DW's Etienne Gatanazi in Kigali.
Now, let's break some news, Eddie. Mm-hmm. 8 people have been killed in an explosion at a munitions factory near Cape Town in South Africa. That's according to officials there, as local residents reported that nearby houses shook from the blast. More reports are coming in about this story as it develops, and you know, accidents are not uncommon, you know, at mines. 8 people have been killed at an explosion.
Sad news, though.
Yeah, at a munitions factory near Cape Town in South Africa. We'll keep following up this story and report it if and whenever we can.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Don't forget, we're also live on our Facebook page, TW Africa. And there's loads of people tuned in. And yeah, you're welcome to the show. Yeah. Coming up, we'll be hearing how peoples in Nigeria prefer to be taught in their mother tongue rather than foreign languages.
They teach us English, mathematics and social studies in Hausa. I understand better when they teach me in Hausa. But when it's English, I don't grasp the topic so easily.
Well, I tend to side with that people there. You know, you can hear the voice, you know. I mean, she prefers to learn in her mother tongue, Hausa, I think.
Nothing wrong with that.
I think it's understandable, you know, because definitely. You can imagine maybe the parents don't know English either.
Uh-huh.
So when it comes to the time for homework, problems.
So if one can learn better in the language that they know better, why not?
Why not? Anyway, today it's education special. This Monday was the beginning of a new academic term in Cameroon, but thousands of children in the English-speaking regions failed to show up because of security concerns.
Cameroonians living in the affected complain of insecurity caused by clashes between the army and separatists. Moki Kinzeka reports from Bamenda, Cameroon.
Head teachers have raised concerns over the deteriorating security situation in English-speaking regions that has forced many pupils to stay away from school. Mbu Emmanuel, head teacher of a government primary school at Mbengwe, did not find any child in his school this morning and instead went to the market and Fons Palace to encourage parents to send their children to school.
We have educated the parents, educated the students. We have gone to the palaces. We have made them to know that education is a permanent asset and that they should do everything possible to come to school because that is the only yardstick that will be used in future to place them at better positions in this country.
Even the elite who are championing calls for back to school, they themselves are unable to spend hours in the Southwest region because of security concerns. We have to be honest to ourselves. We cannot be talking about back to school when kids are not secured, when people should not be able to get to school safely.
Over 150 schools have been torched by suspected separatists. Bernard Okalia Bilai, governor of the Southwest region of Cameroon, says most of the fighters have been killed and insists parents must stop being frightened by armed groups.
Moki Kinzeka.
Yes, now, Eddie, unlike in Cameroon, we've just heard that head teachers have security concerns, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Nigeria, educationists or head teachers have decried the failure of the federal government to implement the policy that allows the use of indigenous languages in schools, which I find really very, very important.
It is.
And it's been 30 years now since it was agreed upon that primary school-going children should be taught in their mother tongues.
Now, three languages, Hausa, Yoruba, and Igbo, were selected to be the languages of instruction for the children from class 1 to 3. This was intended to give the youngsters an opportunity to learn and master their mother tongues. From Kaduna, Africa Link's contributor, Zaharadeen Umar reports.
An Arabic teacher teaching his student in Hausa language at a primary school in northern Nigeria. In collaboration with the Nigerian authorities, UNICEF and other partners are implementing RANA program, a full Hausa-based teaching process that seeks to improve reading skills among pupils in the northern state of Katsina and Zamfara. Aisha Abdisalam, a primary 3 pupil, is among the school children that are currently taught in Hausa. She developed interest in mathematics as a result of the introduction of RANA program.
They teach us English, mathematics and social studies in Hausa. I understand better when they teach me in Hausa. But when it's English, I don't grasp the topic so easily.
Usman Muhammad Limi, a teacher under the RANA program, explain that it is much easier to teach youngsters in a language they understand rather than in foreign languages like English.
When you are teaching the pupil in English, they don't even know the sound, talk less of the word rather than the sentence. But when you teach them in their mother tongue, they know the sound, they know the sentence, they know the word. That will be easy or more easier for them to catch what you wanted to tell them.
Learning in indigenous language, according to some educationists, is the key to better understanding. Educationists blame the non-implementation of the policy on lack of enough literature in the local languages. They argue that authors mainly write in English. But Halima Mohamed Jumari, Director of School Services at Kaduna State Universal Basic Education Suburb, says the state will soon commence full execution of the policy under the RANA program.
Over 400 schools will be piloted as the RANA schools. That is, schools that will be using the mother tongue, purely mother tongue, in the teaching in the schools. So much will say to be provided. As the school session opens, I know we will take off with the program.
Despite the fact that Nigeria has more than 250 ethnic groups, only Hausa, Yoruba, and Igbo were selected, which could be another bone of contention for the implementation of the program countrywide.
That was our contributor, Sahara-Din Umar.
Now, Eddie, I mean, listening to that report and those angelic voices of those pupils, doesn't it take you back many, many years ago when you were still in primary school? And I'm sure you must have had some crazy moments.
Oh, like I remember when you talk about primary school, you know, I used to be the bell boy. They call you bell boy. So you're supposed to, when it's midday, you're supposed to take the bell and ring and say, break time, please, Isaac. And every time after I did that, I put down the bell and rush because it's a long queue. Some food.
So you rang the bell and ran fast.
Exactly. If you want to get some good food, you have to.
Yes, of crazy timekeepers in form of Eddie when they're growing up as young kids. So if you want the top layer, if I should say.
Exactly.
Anyway, we still have much more to come. And as usual, you can go on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and tell us what you think about the stories that we have aired and we are going to air again.
Health check.
To South Africa, where illicit drugs problem is growing deeper and destroying the young generation. A United Nations report shows that South Africa is the regional hub for drug trafficking.
In Johannesburg, Thuso Kumalo speaks to some of the youthful drug addicts to hear their frustrations, inspirations, ambitions, and whether they ever dream of a life free from drugs.
It is 11 o'clock in the morning and Johannesburg-based drug addicts Nyton Siena, 23, and his friend Daniel Milwa have just finished injecting Nyaope into their bloodstream. This is a concoction of dacha, heroin, antiretroviral drugs, red poison and acid, which is very popular amongst drug addicts on the streets of Johannesburg in South Africa. But what is even scarier is the age group of those getting hooked, says Martin Zygmunt, a volunteer counselor at the rehabilitation center at the Johannesburg's notorious suburb of Hillbrow.
Most of the guys that come to our office are already drug addicted for a long time. We have sometimes even people that are under 18, boys and girls.
And for many addicts like Bongani Mtsijana, 30, drug addiction life is not a bed of roses.
It's hard to even keep focus on the streets where you don't have shelter, where you can't bath, where you can't focus and do proper things, you know.
But most people are encouraged that most of these youngsters, when engaged, they express their willingness to quit drugs. Patrick Simosa, a 28-year-old drug addict from the popular Soweto township in Johannesburg, is one of them.
Every day when I sleep, before I sleep, I start to think about those things when I'm like in my bed. Yeah, when I sleep, start to think, hey, what I can do to change, who I can associate with, who I can speak with.
But the root of quitting drugs is not a child's play. It's Daniel Milwa, a 30-year-old addict who started taking illicit drugs in 2010.
If I don't smoke it, I feel tired. You can kill someone if you don't have something to smoke. You can do anything to hurt someone. You steal if you don't have money to buy it.
Most of the young drug addicts say peer pressure has led them to be hooked. Others say conflicts in their families have led them to the streets, where they found drugs in oversupply. They also complain that some rehabilitation centers require a lot of documentation, which they don't have as homeless people. But 32-year-old Sposiso Vilakazi, a former addict who stopped taking drugs in 2016, says, where there is a will, there is a way.
it's not too late for them to stop, because most of the time we tell ourselves that if I stop, then what? Look at me today, like I'm working, and I never thought that I would have a decent life again.
The government is currently working on a prevention and treatment of substance abuse bill in an effort to stop the surge.
Thuso Kumalo with that report.
Now, in our next show, that is tomorrow, we have some good news for you. We have designed a new opener for the show, and I'm sure you will like it, or it will be interesting to your ears. And this is just a sneak peek to what we have for you in store.
DW Africa Link.
Yes, Africa Link.
Interesting.
Really?
Breaking news is the first time hearing this.
Exactly,
myself,
so, and you know,
interesting.
I can't wait to have the longer version of it, Eddie. How about you?
I'm looking forward to tomorrow's show.
And as usual, every Monday, we have still good stuff for you, and that is sports.
Well, definitely sports. Now, starting with a very interesting one.
Exactly.
Consensus Kipruto at the 2018 Diamond League in Zurich track and field meeting. Virtually the entire race with just one shoe. So this guy ran the entire race with just one shoe. Mm-hmm. Now, he's the best steeplechaser on the planet.
According to me, he takes that trophy of being the best steeplechaser on the planet. You know what, Eddie?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very... Steeplechase is very, very energy-consuming sport.
Mm-hmm.
You have to jump there. You have to run there. It's really tough. And of course, the Vice President, William Ruto, was quick to send a tweet.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Our indomitable spirit, determination, and strength of character were on display at the Diamond League final in Zurich as Kipruto won the 3,000-meter steeplechase with one shoe." He also went on to say, "Kudos to Helen Onberi and Timothy Cheruiyot for winning the women's 5,000 meters and men's 1,500 meters. Oh, the Kenyans took everything,
yeah,
as usual.
Not news in this case. But also, moving on with sports and the 17-8 scandal, Isaac. Now, Nigeria will make do with only 18 players at the African and the 17 Nations Cup qualifiers following the disqualification of 6 of its players by the MRI scan, which ruled they were above 17 years.
Yeah. Well,
you said
it's not true. I mean, if it's under 17, for Christ's sake, it is under 17. Why do you bring an Eddie Micah Jr. or an Isaac there to take that slot? Anyway, not only Nigeria, even Benin Republic fared worse.
Wow.
And I should tell you this, because it was kicked out of the competition because most of its players were over the age limit.
I really want to know what age then. I mean, we're talking about under 17. So what age, when if you're going to be kicked out of a competition, then you must have been very old.
The thing is that, you know, when this MRI scan, you know, reveals the results that actually you are beyond that age,
mm-hmm,
by checking especially the teeth,
mm-hmm,
they would say a bracket that you're between 18 and 24. You know, so that already says you are not to be able to qualify.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Not the first time it's happened. Uganda in 2010 was banned for 5 years as a result of all of this cheating. But, hey, Isaac, in Brazil, former Brazilian striker Ronaldo has taken control of Real Valladolid after buying 51% of the La Liga club's shares. It was announced earlier today.
I love that because that is money well spent. Earnings well spent, well invested. Who knew that actually could buy more than 50 shares of a club like Real Valladolid?
Exactly.
I mean, he's been playing, you know, exhibition matches and people thought, oh,
yeah,
is it one of
made
those
some ones? Good money, investing it well. I mean, it's good because a lot of other old players, Isaac, don't have that money to spend.
Yeah, I can give you examples of players who squandered their money. There's Emmanuel Eboué, you know, the Ivorian.
Mm.
I mean, but he has been offered to something in a role in LA Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible West, you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the most successful midfielders the Super Eagles have ever had. And even, you know, he played for AC Milan. But you know what he's doing now, right now as we speak, here in the studios?
Tell me.
He's preaching on the streets of Lagos. He's a street preacher. Well, it's also
it's not so bad.
Yeah. And then also Celestin Barbero, he played some of the biggest clubs I can think of in both England and Belgium. But again, you know, he's wasted the money in lavish lifestyle, buying exotic stuff and
yeah.
So in case you have other players that you may know who squandered their money, go on the Facebook page and let's discuss about this.
Definitely.
Because it's not really cool. On behalf of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
Bye for now.